thrashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Sunday, October 12, 2014. This is the day people are going to remember. This is the day when Ebola spread itself on American shores. It's the first time we've had it transfer within America. And of course, we've already had the first person get it transferred outside of Africa. That was a Spanish nurse. This is another nurse. And we're going to have a special report from Alex Jones on this breaking story. He immediately filed a report. We're going to have that coming up after the break. But it's amazing to look at the reactions to this. And of course, this is intimately tied with our open borders. This is what I would call open borders 2.0. This is where this is leading. We've been talking about how if they leave the borders open, it's not only going to destroy our country in terms of a Cloward and Piven economic basis. They're also looking at ways to incorporate people into this country who have not become citizens, allowing them to vote. We've even got the Mexican consulate paying to shield illegal immigrants in the U.S. from deportation. That's another story that was up on Infowars.com that was put up yesterday. Actually, we're going to talk about that as well. But let's get back to this Ebola patient. This was transferred today. We learned about it. It was actually she fell sick on Friday, went into the hospital, and as they reported, she was following procedures as she'd been given it, following protocols. And they say, well, obviously the protocols were violated. Yeah, the protocols have been violated in a number of areas for quite some time. We were called fearmongers here when Alex Jones and InfoWars was talking about not bringing back patients from Africa into the United States and putting them in less than level 4 biohazard containments. We've talked to scientists who do research with Ebola. They were surprised at the breaking of protocols. Other health workers were surprised at that. Even the cleaning guys who cleaned up the vomit on the sidewalk 4 days after it happened, they wore protective suits. Not the cleanup guys who cleaned up the sidewalk. They did not. They came out with just shirt sleeves and with a high-pressure sprayer. But the guys that got to come in, I believe it was the next day on Friday, it was a company, I think, called the cleaning guys. They said they took the recommendations up a level from what the CDC was recommending. In other words, when you're dealing with something this potentially deadly, that has such a high percentage of people who fall ill to it die, when you're dealing with something that's that contagious and we don't have it under control in Africa, wouldn't you want to go an extra level and take an extra level of precaution? Clearly, they are not under control with this, both in Spain as well as here. The Telegraph reports that she was taken in, and this is the optimism, okay? Is a glass half empty or is a glass half full? Well, the Dallas officials put a smiley face on it, says she was taken into isolation within 90 minutes of arriving at the hospital. What was she doing before she was taken into isolation for 90 minutes in the hospital? We saw this happen to the nurse in Spain as well. She tried on 3 separate occasions over a period of 1 week to get medical care when her temperature went up. She was somebody they knew was working with the Ebola patient. Yet on 3 occasions, they paid no attention to her. Finally, when they realized that she had the disease and they kept her there, they left her in the emergency room for 8 hours, exposed to people who were coming in as well as to medical staff. When they took her in for treatment, she was so violently ill, she was vomiting and had diarrhea. Bodily fluids were everywhere. Of course, you can get it from just touching someone without getting into that level of exposure. But the doctor who worked on her complained about the fact that his suit didn't have sleeves long enough to cover his arms. That's what we're seeing here. We're seeing a kind of an arrogance from Western governments that this can't happen here. And they're trying to do this partially to contain people, to not allow panic to break out. But it's also gone far beyond that, as we pointed out, to a level of deliberate hubris to casually stand down and not follow these procedures. They're not just telling people not to worry and then behind the scenes doing everything they can and above and beyond. No, they're not even doing that. And so we're seeing this now, the first case transferred in the United States. Stay with us right after the break. Alex Jones, take on it. We'll be right back.
smashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
It's Sunday, October 12th, 2014, as we issue this emergency alert report. It has now been confirmed in Dallas, Texas, the site of Patient Zero's death last week. A nurse who was treating him at the Presbyterian Medical Center in Dallas, Texas, has tested positive for contracting Ebola, the deadly virus ravaging hundreds of thousands of people right now, potentially could infect millions in Africa, and now it has spread in the United States, just as it spread last week to another nurse, a healthcare worker in Madrid, Spain. So there are several big questions, obviously, here, and several big issues. Why, for the first time ever, are they bringing Ebola patients into Western countries like Spain and the United States? Why, when other nations like England, France, and Arab countries as well have blocked flights out of countries being ravaged by Ebola, why has the United States not halted flights and is still not even doing basic screening at major airports? Another big question, why did Obama lie to us and say virtually no chance it would come here? Why did the CDC say, hey, we can't control the border and we don't think it's going to spread? Why did the head of the Texas Medical Board come out last week and say that there was basically zero chance Ebola could spread when we know it's been spreading like wildfire in Africa? And many scientists, many virologists, even in the New York Times, have come out and said it may have already begun to go somewhat airborne. So to be clear, there is now an official outbreak of Ebola in the United States. And if this healthcare worker was in a full hazmat suit, you better believe that the children, the wife, the neighbors, the children at the school where these other children went are all obviously in danger. And I think it's safe to say what we said a week and a half ago when this news first broke. The odds are this has spread to wider groups of people. And patient zero, who's now dead, Thomas Eric Duncan, who died last Wednesday, is not the only one. And now that speculation has been confirmed
by the news that a healthcare worker in Texas has tested preliminarily positive for infection with Ebola virus.
CNN headline, Texas nurse tests positive for Ebola, would be first Ebola transmission in the United States. Dallas Morning News, healthcare worker at Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas tests positive for Ebola. CDC protocol breached in treating Ebola patient, Associated Press. And that's the big point that has to be made here out of all these important issues. The default position of not bringing Ebola patients into the United States, that was violated for the first time when I pointed this out, when other people pointed this out, when the Drudge Report pointed this out. Mainstream media demonized us and criticized us and said, how dare you not want to bring Ebola patients here? You must be racist. How dare you fearmonger and say people could be coming across the border with it? Well, now a nurse who is in full hazmat gear has contracted it at the hospital where this person was for a week. And remember, they didn't clean the ambulance for days. They sent some of the kids to school for days, even after they knew patient zero, who's now dead, had Ebola. Evidence is also mounting that the CDC is lying to the American people. Foreign press reported that Mr. Duncan had died a day before and that the CDC was basically covering it up, and that forced them the next day to claim that he died Wednesday morning. There's major evidence that we're being lied to. Ebola patients are being brought in. They're not following proper protocols, and it's spreading. And when we point out that the southern border should be highly controlled as well as the northern border, and that everyone who was on this flight with him should be put in containment, we're called conspiracy theorists for following the default federal law. So clearly, elements of our government want this crisis to get out of control. The good news is the head of SOUTHCOM, the U.S. military branch that oversees Central and South American U.S. interest, came out last week and said the big threat is Ebola coming across the southern border.
Many countries in the Western Hemisphere have about no ability to deal with an Ebola outbreak. We have a lot of West Africans, of the Homeland Security folks doing their work on our southwest border. Of the number of people they capture, a very large percentage of them are West African. I was down in Costa Rica a couple of weeks ago talking to our embassy personnel. One of them relayed a story to me. But there were five or six black guys that were there at the border waiting in line to pass into Nicaragua and then on the way north. And the embassy person walked over and just asked who they were. And they said, well, we're from Liberia. Been on the road about a week. And we're on the way to New York City illegally. So they're on the network. They had flown into, I think, Trinidad, and then met up with the traffickers, and now they're on the way in. They could have made it to New York City and still be within the incubation period of Ebola. That if there's an outbreak in the Caribbean, particularly or in Central America, it will make the 68,000 unaccompanied children, I think, look like a small problem.
The UN estimates run from 1.4 million to 5 million people in Africa alone by December who will contract Ebola. Undoubtedly, many of them will try to flee to the West. Other countries, including African nations, are not letting them in because that's default common sense. So now the U.S. is the dumping ground of people who have contracted Ebola, and now it's confirmed to be spreading in the United States. We the people have to take action, call Congress, call the media, call the White House, call the CDC, and say, listen, you follow federal law, you follow the defaults, and you quarantine the people that have been in contact, you shut that border, you stop those flights, or you will be held accountable when this spreads and they're quarantining hundreds of thousands or millions of U.S. citizens and North Americans. This appears to be a false flag that they've bare minimum allowed to spiral out of control as a pretext for more medical tyranny here in the United States and worldwide. Finally, I want to leave you with a clip that our reporters got last week with the head of the Texas Health and Human Services Commission, Executive Commissioner Kyle Janik, saying to the legislature that there's zero danger, even if Ebola was on the table right in front of him. It's clear they're trying to pacify the public and cover up what's happening, not to stop panic, but to stop a real response.
There is virtually no risk. You can push me as far as you want to say zero. I will not say zero. It's knowing what I know, there is zero risk. I said it. There it is. I shouldn't say that. There's no risk. Ebola virus could be sitting there, and if I'm touching it with unbroken skin, it's not a risk.
Well, folks, we've put the facts out here. We've been proven right again. Now it's up to you to take action and raise the alarm. We'll take you back now to the radio studio where David Knight is live breaking this down and taking your phone calls right here in Austin, Texas and worldwide.
That's right. We're going to be going up to a break in a moment. If you want to call in and talk, especially if you're a healthcare provider, that number is 877-789-2539. It's a different number on Sundays. That's 877-789-ALEX. So if you want to call in, especially if you're a healthcare worker, first responder, we'd like to know what you think, because this is what they're saying. They're saying the Dallas health worker who looked after the first Ebola victim, this is the Telegraph, was wearing a full protective gown, gloves, and face shield as she cared for him. Now, we've been told by Obama that there was absolutely no risk of this coming to America. We were told by the Texas official, as you just heard in that report, there's no risk of it coming. We've been told by the Dallas judge who's working with Homeland Security, there's absolutely no risk. Really? I don't think so. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. That's 877-789-2539.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and if you're just joining us, we had a special report from Alex Jones about the new developments in Ebola. Of course, we've had the first patient in America to contract it in America, and the second one to contract it outside of Africa. Of course, the other one being a nurse in Spain. And this was a nurse in Dallas who contracted it. They're telling us that she was wearing full protective clothing, just as the CDC told her to. But now they're looking at 48 healthcare workers. They say they were considered to be at low risk of developing the disease, but now they're taking a closer look at them. Well, I would hope so. Dr. David Varga, the chief clinical officer, said this individual was following the full CDC guidelines, and we're very concerned. I'm also very concerned, as this report says, that the victim was taken into isolation within 90 minutes of arriving at the hospital. 90 minutes, she was taken into isolation. What was she doing for the first 90 minutes? She was not in isolation. We saw this happen, of course, in Spain as well, where the nurse there had to try three times to get help over a period of 1 week. When she finally went back the last time, she was in the emergency room for over 8 hours after they realized that she had Ebola. When she was finally taken in for care, the doctor who was working with her as she was violently vomiting, had diarrhea. That doctor did not have a suit that covered his arms completely. This is a very, very dangerous situation. We don't fully understand, I believe, how it's being transmitted. We've said this from the very beginning. If they cannot control this, if it's doubling every 2 weeks in Africa, then I think we need to go to another level of containment. Perhaps there's something about this that they don't understand. They're saying that they know that it's not airborne, but we've seen some studies that might indicate that was the case with animals. And of course, to say that it's not airborne doesn't mean that it can't be transmitted via aerosol. To say that someone cannot transmit it before they're exhibiting symptoms, I don't believe is necessarily true either. They're telling people that you're still shedding the virus in bodily fluids as well as sexual fluids for several weeks up to months after you have convalesced from this. They've seen this. But then they say, well, we haven't proven that anybody could get it from that. Well, they're still telling people to keep apart from others sexually and in other ways, still be concerned about those fluids. And yet they're not concerned that it could be transmitted that way prior to somebody exhibiting a fever. So there's a lot of questions about this. And of course, as I mentioned in the very first segment, we had the guys who went in and cleaned up the apartment 5 days later. That's how long they took to do a response. But the cleaning company that went in took it to another level from what the CDC had told them. They went to the next higher level. They wore respirators because they're not convinced that they can't get it from airborne aerosols. And of course, Stefan Molyneux had a great video that he's put out about this. He says, of course, it's already gone airborne. We've allowed it onto airplanes. That's one of the most dangerous ways to make it go airborne. That's something that is far worse than coughing or sneezing and transmitting it to someone that's just across the room. You can take it across continents that way, and now we're seeing that happening. Of course, the CDC says the protocol was breached in treating this Ebola patient. They don't know exactly how. The doctor there says that they followed all procedures, that they wore protective clothing, but he's saying somehow our protocol was breached. Well, you know, the protocol for containing dangerous diseases like this was breached many times by the CDC. That's what we've been saying for the last couple of months. The fact that they brought patients into the United States, the fact that they allowed travelers to bring it in, that they're not containing it within that country. Those are breaches of protocol that you would use in a dangerous pandemic like we have going. And this is far greater than anything we've ever seen in any previous Ebola outbreaks. There's been several Ebola outbreaks. It's affected anywhere from dozens of people. The worst two prior to this were 300 and 425. This is way beyond that. It's doubling every 2 weeks still, and they say that if it continues this curve, we're going to see anywhere from 500,000 to 1.5 million people in the two primary African countries of Liberia and Sierra Leone by December. By December. That's 5 to 15% of the combined population of those two countries. Work those numbers out to the United States. Think about if 5 to 15% of the United States were to get it. But of course, we're doing something about it. We're sending our soldiers into that area, even though nurses with protective clothing are contracting it when they care for patients in Spain and in the United States. We're going to send thousands of military personnel into that area. absolute insanity. Just completely standing down. And look at what's happening at the border. We just had this report. We played it on Friday. Dr. Eileen Marty is someone who is treating patients in Sierra Leone. She came back into the country, and she was absolutely amazed. Here's what she said.
How many days did you spend in Nigeria?
31 days.
Okay, 31 days. Then you come back to the U.S. through Germany. Which city in Germany?
Frankfurt.
Frankfurt. You go Frankfurt, Miami, nonstop.
Correct. Yes.
And then you land in Miami, Miami's international airport, and then what happens?
I get to the kiosk because I'm a global entry person, and you know, enter the information, put my fingerprints, and mark the fact that I've been in Nigeria, and nobody cares. And
nobody stopped you.
Nobody.
Not a single test.
Nothing.
And you were thinking what?
And I'm thinking that I've just spent the bulk of my time worrying about entrance and exits, because my key role was to help develop the exit strategy and the entrance strategy, so no more cases of Ebola could be imported into Nigeria and no case of Ebola could be exported from Nigeria.
So they were doing it in Nigeria, but no one was doing it here in the United States.
Nor in Germany.
All right, so were you surprised then when you heard about the first case of Ebola here in the United States?
No.
It was about to happen.
Because of what we've already spoken about, that the incubation period is 2 to 21 days, and the best we could do, and we did the best that any country is doing in Nigeria, but the best we can do is look for symptoms, test for symptoms in symptomatic patients, and ask epidemiologic questions. But if somebody either doesn't know they were exposed or lies on these questionnaires...
Like the first case who came from West Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he lied a lot.
Now,
not the one to Dallas, but the one to Nigeria.
Now,
okay, let's leave it at that.
Would you be surprised if we find
more
cases?
That's what we've heard over and over again from healthcare people like this doctor who is setting up protocols to try to keep it out of Nigeria, to try to keep it from leaving Nigeria. We heard the same thing when the news crew came back. They said they had been covering it directly, and they said, I think I heard something about that. They go away for a while, and then they come back, and they say, you should watch out for signs of developing Ebola. And she said, well, what should I look for? I don't know. And they let the two people traveling with her, who are cameraman and producer, they also let them through. Same thing we heard from Dr. Gil Mobley in Atlanta. He staged a protest in the airport wearing a protective clothing suit to try to draw people's attention to the fact that nothing is being done to screen anyone. Now, when they touched down the Marines at the hot zone in Ebola, they had Liberians come out and take their temperature. We don't do that. It's exactly the opposite. I mean, if it wasn't being engineered, if they weren't doing everything they could to spread it, we would be living in a complete idiocracy. But I don't think they're that stupid. We're going to be talking to you, taking your calls coming up in the next segment. We're also going to take a look at the money trail with Big Pharma and Ebola. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. From time to time, we've been tempted to believe that society has become too complex to be managed by self-rule, that government by an elite group is superior to government for, by, and of the people.
The Alex Jones Show, because there is a war on for your mind.
Hello, me. Meet the real me and my misfits way of life.
All right. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Sunday, October 12th, 2014. We're talking about, of course, Ebola. We have had the second patient in the United States, the first time it's been contracted within the United States. Of course, the second time it's been contracted outside of Africa, the other being a nurse as well. I thought it'd be interesting. We're going to go to your calls in just one moment. We're going to go to Dallas Ebola Watch. That's what the caller calls himself. But I wanted to talk about the first nurse that came to the United States with it that was brought in with Dr. Kent Brantley. Her name was Nancy Wrightball. This is an interview from Science Insider on October 2nd. They asked her, how did you become infected? Because we're told that all the protocols were followed We're told that by the people who are in the hospital. Of course, the CDC is saying, well, you didn't follow one of our protocols. While they stand down at the border, they refuse to close the border. You know, isolation is the first protocol that should be followed. But going back to Nancy Reitbaul, she says, I don't really know. She says, nobody's sure, least of all me. I never felt like I was unsafe. I never felt like I walked into a situation where I was being exposed. I was on the low-risk side of things. I was never in the crisis or the Ebola center. I was always on the outside. I made sure doctors and nurses were dressed properly before they went in and out. I decontaminated them before they went out. We kept a close check on each other. She says, we had an employee, though, who was doing the same job I was doing. He got sick. I didn't know he was sick. He didn't tell anybody. He actually thought he had typhoid. The day I started having symptoms, at least a fever, was the last day I saw him. He did have Ebola. He did not survive. She says, I never remembered touching him, although it's possible he could have picked up a sprayer to decontaminate someone, and I could have picked up that sprayer, or we could have touched the same thing. I never touched him. I never touched him. So she thinks that perhaps it was something that they touched intermediately, that he touched something, she later touched it. That brings to mind the reckless behavior that Judge Jenkins in Dallas modeled for everybody when he went to the apartment and said, there is zero risk that I can get it here because I'm not touching a patient. You don't have to touch a patient to get it. And of course, she was on the outside of the Ebola Crisis Center. Of course, Dr. Kent Brantley, who was working there, also contracted it. I don't know what he thinks was the means of his getting infected. But listen, at the time that Judge Jenkins went in, it was several days after the patient had left. I would not feel confident going into that apartment. And of course, the people who cleaned it up two days later, went another level above the hazmat suits that CDC had prescribed. But to go into that apartment and then to brag at a press conference that he's wearing the same shirt that he wore into the apartment and hung out with them in the apartment and then drove them in his car for 45 minutes and he comes to a press conference and says, I'm wearing the same shirt, no problem. He is sending a very reckless and dangerous message to people. Something that, whether he intends it to or not, he does work for Homeland Security. So whether or not he intends this, he is sending a message to people that could very well spread this. The virus lasts, they say, anywhere from a few hours to a few days. And it also is dependent on the amount of sunlight that it gets. And we're going to have a report about that as well. Another device that somebody has come up that may offer some promise on that. But the bottom line is he didn't tell people that. He just basically said, there's no problem walking into the apartment if the patient is not there. That's not what somebody who worked in the country believes. Let's go to some of your calls now. Dallas Ebola Watch in Texas. You've been holding for a while. Go ahead.
Mr. Knight, thank you. I wanted to break some news that I haven't seen in the media, and it's regarding the pharmaceutical companies that have been contracted by the Department of Defense under Project Biohazard. Technia Pharmaceuticals, on their website, they have information that in January 14, 2014, they began human Ebola clinical trials. So clinical trials of their product, PKM Ebola, in humans. And
yes,
that was 2 months, obviously, before the outbreak.
Yes.
Technia is one of the companies that saw a 23% increase in their stock. I guess basically because they're one of the companies listed as trying to find the treatment for this spontaneous outbreak. And
yes, very much.
Actually listed. Go ahead.
Yes, we're going to have a report on that in the next hour, actually. They not only began trials in January, but they also got a lot of money from Monsanto at that time. And they got a stock option, and that stock spiked 12 days before the Ebola outbreak in Guinea, the very first place that occurred this time, was noticed. So there's some very interesting follow-the-money issues going on here. There's also an interesting contrast and hypocrisy, the way that they're pushing ZMapp as a panacea, as a miracle drug. It works on an antibody strategy. And yet at the same time, these blood transfusions, which operate on the same antibody strategy, are demonized as a black market that needs to be shut down. I think there's a lot of questions that need to be raised about what's going on with big pharmaceutical companies and the government. I'm very concerned that they're going to pronounce one of these as a miracle drug and coerce everybody into taking it.
Yes, sir. Am I still on air? I'm sorry.
Sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was just wondering if I was still on air.
Yes, you are.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So I'm awesome. I'm so glad to hear that you guys are looking into it. I would expect nothing less from InfoWars. Dallas Ebola Watch is just a small little Facebook page that we started because we were concerned and we were following and researching these things. So Technia Pharmaceuticals, look it up, everyone. They're making money off this. The DoD contracted them to develop. And it's from the Zaire strain, which is odd. Another quick point is that on the CDC website, this outbreak is very, very odd because all of the other, the CDC has a chronological history of the Ebola virus. And every previous outbreak started in one country. This is the only outbreak that started in multiple countries. And the nature of viruses, that's almost impossible. I'm not an expert, but I'm a critical thinker.
Yes.
That's ridiculous. How could it start at the same time in different countries?
There's a lot of questions about...
They were doing a trial.
There's a lot of questions about the timing of this. Let me ask you before I go to the next caller. You're there in Dallas. You're watching this develop. How do you feel about Judge Jenkins and what he's been doing?
Oh, my gosh. He's either complicit in this or he's just a puppet who's trying to politically posture himself for some further political aspirations. But I think he's an idiot.
My take on it exactly. I don't think we could put a finer point on it. Thank you so much. Let's go to Richard in Texas. Richard?
Hey, yeah, this is always a great show. I've been a Sunday afternoon listener for probably 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I consider myself a constitutionalist, and I would say that the cream of the truth rises to the top, and Alex and InfoWars are a great example of that.
I
had two quick inquiries about the Ebola. And find it very interesting that even though maybe it has not gone airborne, that it is indeed much more highly infectious than we've been led to believe, and that the World Health Organization seems to have more intense restriction on this than even our own Centers for Disease Control. And with that, I'll leave that to you. I'll just hang up and listen, but thank you so much for taking the call.
Well, I agree. I think that when you've got a disease that is doubling every couple of weeks, that they're looking at if it keeps up the same curve, that it's going to affect anywhere from 5 to 15% of the population in those two countries, I think that there's clearly something about it that they don't understand. It's not just the sanitation conditions in those countries or the lack of medical care. Look at the hundreds. It's well over 300 medical workers who have gone who are using all the protocols and procedures that are recommended as far as the conventional wisdom goes. I just read at the beginning of this segment, Nancy Reitball, who is a nurse there, saying she had no idea how she got that. Her best guess is that she touched something that a fellow coworker who came down with Ebola had touched. That was the best guess that she could come up with. So there are ways that this is being transmitted that they don't really know because they're not controlling it even within their hospitals, even within their medical care workers. We're going to be right back. We're going to take some more of your calls. Of course, we've had the second person in Dallas now to come down with Ebola, the first person in the United States to contract Ebola within the United States. Stay with us. We'll be right back with your calls.
Stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we are taking your calls about the recent developments in Ebola. As we were just talking about the patient who was a nurse treating the Ebola patient, Thomas Duncan in Dallas, has now come down with it, and they say that she was following all the protocols. They say she had protective clothing. The CDC is insisting that her protocol wasn't followed, and yet we see people who have gone to Africa by the hundreds dying from Ebola, medical workers, doctors, unsure how they contracted this disease. They were following the protocols. I'm sure if you go to that country and you see some, if you've seen the pictures of people who have Ebola, the horrific blisters and just the condition that they're in, if you watch somebody that has contracted that, if you're treating those people, I would think you would use the utmost care to try to make sure that you don't contract that. I don't think people would treat it in the cavalier manner that we've seen Judge Jenkins illustrate in Dallas. I think they would be very much more concerned, very much more careful about this if they had actually treated people who came down with this. So my take on this from the beginning is that they are not telling us the truth about how it is transmitted, or they don't understand it. We have seen a lot of doctors come out and say that they believe that the protocol that you could just, you can only get it if you come in direct contact with someone who is currently exhibiting symptoms. We've seen a lot of doctors pushing back on that now, saying they don't believe that is true any longer. I think it's time for us to reassess that. I wanted to take some calls from people, especially people who were medical professionals. The next person on the line is William from Tennessee. He says he has, he's a worldwide eye care provider. William, what does that mean?
Hi, how you doing?
Hi. What does that mean that you're a worldwide eye care provider?
Well, I do medical mission work all over the
okay.
place. I've done Africa, you know, Haiti, South America, you know, all over.
Okay. And what did you want to say about the Ebola outbreak?
Okay. Well, what I want to say basically is, like, when I go to some of these countries, I see a lot of people, you know, dying from stuff that's so simply conquered here that it's not funny. I mean, that's just something that happens means that their healthcare system is just not up to par at all, for one. Now, to let the stuff come here is kind of stupid, because a lot of the countries do not even let me enter unless I have certain vaccinations.
Yeah, it was interesting to see that as these Marines were touching down in Ebola, it was Liberian doctors who came out and took their temperature. We don't see that happening anywhere in the United States.
Right. Now, I mean, I'm one of the ones who was in Florida during those hurricanes. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the fights for gas and stuff like that. And that judge that walked in that house is an idiot. I hate to say that, but
yeah, it was very reckless. That was very reckless behavior. I don't know if, listen, he's got an agenda. This is a guy cut his teeth on open borders, and that's his agenda. He's up for reelection in a couple of weeks. People in Dallas need to take note of this. But absolutely, what he did was recklessly modeling behavior that nobody should be that cavalier about with this disease, Ebola.
Yes. Now, for sure, I was a first responder in like Haiti during those earthquakes, and I was right there when the press was lying, or CNN was lying to the public, and they actually had to recant what they said, because Dr. Sanjay Gupta said, oh, they're making all those first responders leave for security concerns, and we were just getting on the buses getting our equipment off. And we was like, what? You know? And
no, you're kidding me. CNN was actually caught lying? Can't believe it. No, I mean, we've seen, I don't know if you've seen it at InfoWars, we show it often, that clip where at the outbreak of the first Gulf War, they were actually in the studio and they were putting on gas masks and helmets and pretending that they were under missile attack. I mean, it's a pretty funny clip, but they're running it now for anybody that's watching this. But yeah, we've caught CNN stretching the truth and fabricating the news quite a number of times, so I'm not surprised they did it. It's interesting to hear you give us yet another data point.
Well, get ready. That's all I got to say.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. Let's go to Jerry in Georgia. Jerry.
Hi, David. I just wanted people to think that, I want to point out that the soldiers being sent over to Africa, they're nothing more than a mandatory control group for a clinical trial.
I believe so. We've seen that happen many times, haven't we, with the U.S. military. They've used them as guinea pigs.
Yes, sir. Alex has documented many times, but also when I was sent overseas to Panama, you're given all kinds of inoculations. You don't know what you're given.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they just did it. They just did a major exercise where Camp Lejeune, they said, well, we're going to run a drill that's going to be in case a pandemic breaks out. And they gave 1,200 flu shots, they said, to people. And you see the picture of it. The guy's not wearing gloves that's given the flu shots. But they gave them 1,200 shots. They said it was a flu vaccine. We don't know what it was, right? And we also don't know when you get a flu vaccine. That's one of the things we talk about here at InfoWars over and over again. What is in the vaccine? What are the preservatives? What are the things that they use to accelerate it? Well, of course, it's things like mercury. It's things like formaldehyde. They're clear about that. They put all kinds of stuff in there. So apart from the whole idea as to whether or not vaccines work, and we're going to have a report, I'm going to talk about some information that we have about this miracle drug, ZMapp, and we're going to take a look at the history of how pharmaceutical companies have been getting into this particular outbreak. It's very interesting, the timing, and it's very interesting, the hypocrisy of how they're selling something that is essentially based on the idea that you're going to give somebody's immune system a boost with antibodies, but instead of doing it with blood serum, they want to do it with an artificial genetically modified plantibodies. And of course, that's where they're putting all their money. DARPA started it. DARPA helped to fund it. Big Tobacco helped to fund it. The Gates Foundation is getting into it. So we're going to talk about that at six after. But I want to take your calls in this segment and in the next segment. Thank you, Jerry. Let's go to Alan in Florida. Alan.
Hi. Hi, David. Hi. 2 points. Remember when they brought in the infected doctor and the nurse who was with Samaritan's Purse?
Yes.
And they brought them to Emory University. The contractor on that was Phoenix Air out of Cartersville, Georgia, which is an interesting airline. If you look up, they have a State Department contract to be transporting the Ebola patients. And they've also done a lot of work in the intelligence community.
Yeah.
The second thing I want to mention was there was rumors. I'm going to say these are rumors because I have no evidence on the internet back in August. That there was something going on in Kenema, Sierra Leone. The rumor was that there was some sort of laboratory at a hospital and that they may have been involved in this Ebola outbreak and that someone named Glenn Thomas with the World Health Organization was going to try to blow the whistle on a cover-up there, and then he was killed in the MH17 crash. Have you heard any of this? This has been debunked supposedly by PolitiFact, but is there anything to be looked at there?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, there was a report that was picked up. We picked it up by John Rappaport. It was also picked up in one of those countries talking about how they had shut down a medical research lab there that was working on Ebola that they were concerned about. So I'm not prepared to talk about that at the moment. And, you know, people can do their own research on that.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Yeah. In terms of talking about contractors, though, as well, people have pointed out that if they wanted to build these facilities, they have contractors that they could send over. They don't need to send over thousands of troops. I really do believe that they are being used as guinea pigs, that they're being used to expose them and then, of course, bring that back. But don't worry. They've got your back. We've got Obamacare. We've got the VA. You know, they've been there for us every time we need them, right? We're hearing that from Laurie Garrett, who is a writer. She works for the Council on Foreign Relations, and, you know, she came out last week and said, hey, Obamacare is the way that we're going to keep track of this. That's key to controlling the Ebola outbreak is going to be Obamacare. I would say if that's true, it's game over, man. We're done. Let's go to Ginger in Florida. Ginger. Hello, Ginger. Are you there? I think we lost Ginger. Let's go to Shauna in Kentucky. Shauna.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing good. How are you? What did you want to talk about?
Good. So my background is psychology, so I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on these killers because that's what they are. And, you know, it really goes back to 1776. I called and spoke to Alex about this little baby code, and I just want to let people know because they might not understand this. But the year 1776, we have two sevens in the middle, the six on the end, the one on the end, that's another seven, that's three sevens. And the way the code works is back then, they wrote these sevens like they had a little end on them at the bottom. When you flip it, they look like twos. And I noticed because I've watched this code, the six is flipped over into nine, sevens into twos, and then that one. And that nine, the two and the two, that's 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, that's two more sevens. That is seven represents the good people, like you, me, and Alex, the people that love life. And what these killers have done is they've used the code that we use to get away from Great Britain, to get out of slavery. And they use 666.
All right, that's it. That's it. We're out of time for this segment. Thanks, Ginger. Interesting ideas. We're going to be back. Stay with us. We're going to talk at six after about the money trail. We're going to follow the money. Stay with us.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're taking your calls here. Of course, this is the day that we've learned that a second person in Dallas has come down with Ebola, the first person in the United States to contract it in the United States. the second person to contract it outside of Africa. In both cases, they were nurses. In this particular case, they are very adamant that they followed all the procedures. They don't understand what's going on, but of course the CDC says you must not have followed our protocols. Well, you know what? People who are following their protocols are still coming down with the diseases in Africa. They don't have it under control there. So the question is, do they really have a full protocol? And the first protocol is you don't bring people into the country who have it. You don't allow that kind of travel into the country that we've seen. Of course, they are not going to do anything to control travel, to even screen people who have been traveling, because, of course, that would be politically incorrect. We need to keep our borders open. And this is the result of keeping our borders open. It opens us to terrorism, to disease, to financial ruin, because Obamacare, unlike what the lady from the Council on Foreign Relations told us, Obamacare is not going to solve Ebola. The two of those combined will destroy this country financially as well as by the millions of people dying if it gets out. But let's go to some of your calls now. Let's go to Darren in Texas. Darren, go ahead.
Hey, David.
Hey. What do you want to say?
Talk to you. Listen, I've got a couple of points here. First of all, I work in a hospital in North Texas, and, you know, the equipment they're using is just protective equipment. It's a front gown with a face shield and a mask. It is not a hazmat suit.
Yes.
So we've got to be careful and distinguish between those two. Also, I want to know how much, you know, what's the percentage of healthcare workers that are from Africa? I know I work with the number of them, probably 60 or 70%, and they travel back and forth. And I just wonder if there's something with that. As far
That's very concerning, isn't it? Because the lady who called in the ambulance for Mr. Duncan on that Sunday, the second time, he was reluctant to go back because he had just been sent away when he had gone previously. She worked in the healthcare industry, and when the ambulance workers got there, she told them, put on masks and gloves. He's from Liberia. There are viruses. She didn't mention Ebola, but she was concerned for them. And, you know, she was given the all clear by the CDC only 1 week later to go back to work. She was caring for him as he was sick. I mean, she was somebody that they should be keeping isolated in quarantine, yet they gave her the all clear to go back to work. Yet to her, we're grateful that to her credit, she did not do that. She isolated herself. I don't know if she is still doing that or not. But of course, giving her the all clear after just 7 days, it takes, from their literature, 8 to 10 days for it to manifest symptoms, up to 21 days. But after 7 days, they told her to go back. So again, we see this inconsistency with the CDC in terms of what they're telling people and what they're actually doing. That's very, very troubling. Do you find that troubling?
I really do. I find all of this troubling, to be honest. I mean, they're just totally disregarding all the protocols that we've followed for years now. And to bring them in, I mean, there's only so many level 4 beds in the U.S.
I think it's 19, yes.
Yeah, and it's just crazy to be dealing with these. I mean, it is so easy to make a mistake. I mean, when AIDS was a big problem, needle sticks, I mean, that's a lot harder to stick yourself than to rub your nose after you take off this protective equipment. You know?
And as I mentioned before, the Nancy Reitball, who came back with Dr. Kent Brantley, the first two that were brought into the country, she said she had no idea how she had contracted it. She said she was very careful. She was not even in the hot zone. They would decontaminate the doctors when they were coming out. The only thing that she could guess was that she had touched something that a fellow worker who came down with Ebola had touched and that it had transferred that way. She was certain that she had not had any direct contact with him, had not touched him. That's what we're told is the only thing that we need to be concerned about. Yet she knows that she did not do that. We're going to be right back, and I'm going to talk about some amazing hypocrisy at the center of these miracle drugs that are coming out, and also some suspicious timing in terms of the finances involved. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
KLN, Los Angeles. Clone Radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else. Clone.
Hitler took the guns. Stop.
Stalin took the guns. Mao took the guns. Fidel Castro took the guns. Hugo Chavez took the guns. 1776 will commence again if you try to take our firearms. The Republic will rise again when you attempt to take our guns.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're talking about the new developments in Ebola. Of course, another person in Dallas coming down with it, a nurse, the first person to contract it in the United States. The second time a Westerner has contracted it from treating someone who's been brought back out of Africa. I wanted to look, however, at what we're seeing being sold to us. Look at these headlines, for example. On the one hand, we've got these headlines about ZMapp as a miracle drug. Trial Ebola drug ZMapp, 100% effective in treating monkeys. Then biotechs are working to speed Ebola treatment. Then another one, GMO tobacco mystery serum rescues Ebola virus victims. Wow, sounds like everything is fine. The only problem is that they just need some time to ramp up production and sell a lot of these to us. But then on the other hand, there's another treatment that's out there that you may not have heard them talking about very much. And that is blood transfusions, or as they call it, convalescent serum. And of course, it's from patients who are convalescing, and they take their blood plasma, their serum, they make sure that it doesn't have any Ebola in it, but it does have antibodies because they successfully fought off the disease, and they do a transfusion into the other patients. Listen, however, to the way they describe that. This headline from the Daily News, World Health Organization says blood from Ebola survivors found on the black market. Margaret Chan, director of the WHO, says patients who buy serum illegally run the risk of contracting HIV or going into anaphylactic shock and dying. Well, of course, that would be because you didn't match the blood type. That's a very easy test to do. For $10, you can get a kit retail, single quantity, to test the blood type and make sure you don't get the wrong type of blood. But of course, they want to put that out there. HIV, hepatitis, you can test for those at $100 combined cost for the two kits, single quantity, retail. That's something that could easily be addressed, but they want to scare you about it. Here's another one. Black market blood. Desperate Ebola patients turn to illicit means for potential serum. Risk of AIDS and other blood-borne diseases skyrocket. Another one. Black market sale of Ebola blood survivors raises concerns. So I guess we should be very concerned about that. The only problem is that the people who have come down with it, the people who have been in country, value that very highly. They value the convalescent serum, the blood transfusions, very highly. As a matter of fact, one of the things that Thomas Eric Duncan's family is complaining about is that he didn't receive a blood transfusion. They say that the family is outraged as he was refused a blood transfusion. Well, he wasn't so much refused one as they didn't have one of the correct type. We've seen blood transfusions given over and over again by Westerners, by doctors who come back into this country, or healthcare providers, nurses who survived and they want to help other people. The first thing they want to do is give them a blood transfusion from their blood. We see this report from Business Insider, why the NBC cameraman who contracted Ebola will receive the blood of an Ebola survivor. Of course, that's Dr. Kent Brantley. He's going to donate blood to this cameraman, Ashoka Mukpo, who was filming for NBC and country, came down with Ebola. He's going to get a blood transfusion from Dr. Kent Brantley, and he's not the first one. We also had another doctor who came back, and he was treated with TMK Ebola, an experimental drug. That's all you'll hear them talk about. But he also received several blood transfusions from Dr. Kent Brantley. He was very keen to give it to him as well. And, of course, Dr. Kent Brantley himself, a survivor, was treated with a blood transfusion from someone that he treated that was very grateful to him. They said he wanted to pay it forward. He wanted to repay him for the treatment that he had gotten. So he sent a blood donation to Dr. Kent Brantley. We don't see that being reported in the media. What we see them reporting is that ZMapp is a miracle drug that people are recovering from. In actuality, the people that we've been hearing about who've been coming back, most of them have received a blood transfusion and some experimental drug, like TMK or brincidofovir, which is what the cameraman is going to be getting as well. They're getting these experimental drugs, but nobody is talking about the blood transfusion. Now, what's really interesting about this to me is the hypocrisy at the center of this. Because if you look at the mechanism for ZMapp, it actually uses the same mechanism as a blood transfusion. The idea of both of these is that as somebody is fighting this, you give them reinforcements or you give them an early injection of antibodies directly into their body. You don't wait for their body's immune system to respond and build its own antibodies. You give them reinforcements, essentially. And that's the idea behind the blood transfusions. It's not a new idea. It's something that's been around for quite a while, but it's something that they're not talking about. Actually, it goes back all the way to 2003. In 2003, it was reported by the Telegraph that a doctor in Hong Kong was treating patients who were suffering from SARS, sudden acute respiratory syndrome. You remember that was a massive epidemic in China. He was doing the same kind of convalescent serum. He claimed that he had a success rate of more than 60% for the experimental treatment, okay? He also said that although not all those treated with the serum had recovered, none had died so far. He said they just take longer to recover or they're still in the hospital. Now, there was also a study about Ebola back in 1996. We've had several outbreaks of Ebola over the years. In most of the previous outbreaks, it was really just tens of people who got it. The worst ones, other than that, were there was a couple where they had about 300 people that came down with Ebola, one where there was 425. We've never seen anything where there are thousands of people who have contracted it, thousands of people who have died. This is so much beyond anything that we've previously seen. But during this 1996 outbreak, where there was 312 people who came down with Ebola, 80% of them died, but they did a study. They actually looked at this with 8 people, which I find is kind of interesting because as we've looked at these Westerners who've been given ZMapp, the miracle drug, that's also about 7 people. So it's about the same size population. Now, what they found with this study that they did back in 1996, they were very careful to screen the blood to make sure that it didn't have any other diseases, that it didn't have any Ebola in it. And they found in these patients who ranged from ages 12 to 54 with an average of 33 years, they found that they had 7 out of the 8 patients recover. This was in an outbreak where they had an 80% casualty rate. So 7 out of 8 patients recovered. Now, in these patients, it was a very carefully controlled environment. They were given very good palliative care, and that's something we haven't really talked about a lot. When you come down with Ebola, you are losing a lot of fluids. You're vomiting violently, massive diarrhea. People are losing the bodily fluid, so you have to keep them hydrated. You have to keep their electrolytes in balance, and that means that they have to carefully monitor their electrolytes. But in this control situation, where they knew that they were getting good blood, they had 7 out of 8 patients survive. The 8th patient actually had broken her fever, then had an epileptic seizure, fell out of the bed. They found her on the floor with a massive bruise on her head. So it's not clear whether she was cured or not, but they're not counting that. I find it interesting that the bottom of that study, they push back and throw in a lot of anecdotal evidence about Westerners that they knew who had transfusions and then recovered or didn't recover. But there was no control over those situations. Those are strictly anecdotal. I think it's really interesting that they would throw in anecdotal studies like that when they had a very carefully controlled population that they were looking at that had an 88% survival rate at a time where they were having 80% casualties. Now, after the break, we're going to talk about the timing of investments in this outbreak, and we're going to look at the companies that are investing in these strategies. This is a strategy that if they didn't understand that it worked, why would they spend millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to reproduce it artificially in a patented way? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. We're going to be taking your calls in a few minutes. If you want to call in and tell us what you think about this latest development in Ebola with another person coming down with it in Dallas, that number on Sunday is 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-ALEX. Now, I was just talking in the previous section about how we're seeing blood transfusions, which are highly valued in the countries where where Ebola has reached pandemic episodes, and highly valued by the medical professionals who come back into this country. It's not just Dr. Kent Brantley who is doing everything he can to make sure that he donates blood to the people who have the same blood type that he does. We also had a British nurse, Will Pooley, fly into the United States to offer his blood. We had a Spanish nurse who flew back to Spain to try to give a blood transfusion to a Spanish priest. She had survived in country. The whole idea is that giving this blood transfusion, this convalescent serum as they call it, is a way to transfer antibodies from someone who survived via blood transfusion into a patient who is struggling with this. And what we see happening is we see the World Health Organization and others come out and say one of two things. Either they talk about how dangerous it is to have a black market in blood, and yes, there is a risk in that, but it's something that they could help with very cheaply if it wasn't for, I believe, a money trail. The other thing they want to do is say, well, we don't really know if this is effective. We haven't done enough studies on it. They don't have any incentives to do a study on it. It's just like we've seen with so many natural medicines. You know, there have been studies. As I mentioned, the 1996 Ebola study where they had 8 patients, 7 out of the 8 of them recovered. One of those patients had broken the fever but had an epileptic seizure, fell out of the bed, had a hematoma on her head, and perhaps that was the reason that she died. We've had 7 people get ZMAP. We've had most of them recover. We've had 2 deaths from it. We've had 3 people in Liberia who were healthcare workers, and we don't really know if they received blood transfusions or not. So if we remove those and look at the remaining 4, we see that out of the 3 people who survived with ZMAP, they all 3 had blood transfusions. The one who did not survive did not get a blood transfusion. I find that to be very interesting, but why, and this is the question, why would DARPA and Big Tobacco and the U.S. Army's bioweapons people, why would they work so hard to come up with an artificial version of human antibodies? We've had a situation in the African countries where 30% of the people have survived in this outbreak. That means that they literally have thousands of possible donors over there. If the Melinda Gates and Bill Gates Foundation wants to help people, if the Wellcome Trust wants to help people, why couldn't they do the simple thing and set up a blood donor registry, help people to test the blood for purity? That could be done right now. That could be done to prevent this from getting out of hand. Yet we see in the New York Times, and we report on this in the nightly news, that as the Gates Foundation is getting into this and the Wellcome Trust, they're arranging for mass production of ZMAP in animal cells. They say it's a more conventional method. Right now, they're growing them in plant cells. And let me just describe this process to you briefly. What they do is they infect a mouse with Ebola. When the mouse starts to produce antibodies, they take those antibodies out. They genetically modify those, hopefully to make them more acceptable to the human body. Then they take those genetically modified mouse antibodies and they put them in a plant. And the plant then reproduces that. That's what they call plantibodies. That's what they're injecting into people. Hey, what could possibly go wrong with that? But that is the artificial patented version of it. They've already got human antibodies that they could use. But of course, they can't make any money out of that. And listen to this line from the New York Times story. They say, supplies of the drug are expected to be limited to hundreds or maybe even thousands of treatment courses by early next year. Now, early next year, they're talking about anywhere from 500,000 to 1.5 million people having it just in the African countries if they don't stop the upward curve of this. So they say they're going to have hundreds or thousands of it. Meanwhile, they're going to have hundreds of thousands or millions of people with it. And they say it wouldn't be nearly enough if the epidemic continues to spiral out of control. But they're not about to go in and start really doing something seriously with an alternative treatment. We've seen that over and over again. And there's also a lot of questions about, of course, the profit of this. We know that that's why they're not doing anything with it. And we've already seen that Chimerix, which made brincidofovir, which is the drug that Mr. Duncan was given, he did not survive. We've seen that their stock went way up when they gave it to him as a trial. And then when it didn't have any success in his case, their stock tanked. We've also seen now that Tecmira's drug, TMK Ebola, is being used, that their stock is going way up. So they rise and fall with this stuff. But there's some interesting timing on this. Back in January of this year, we had an investment from Monsanto into Tecmira, the people who are making TMK Ebola. They invested $1.5 million. This was Monsanto, invested $1.5 million into Tecmira back in January 13th, 2014. And it was a stock option. If the stock option was exercised, they would make about a 5,700% return on investment. I believe they probably realized that because 12 days before anyone received news of the outbreak in Guinea, where apparently it started, the first announcement of it anyway, they announced 49 people have it. Then 12 days before that, this particular stock spiked. So follow the money. Ask yourself why it is that we have such a massive outbreak. Again, as I mentioned, they've had several outbreaks that were just a couple of dozen people. They've had a few outbreaks where it was two of them where it was about 300 people, one about 400 people. Now we've got thousands of people that are coming down with this. And of course, isn't it convenient that big pharmaceuticals have a lot of different things that they're working on at the time? And of course, DARPA is behind the one that Gates is getting behind. They're putting all of their money into that. But nobody is looking at the cheaper alternatives. And let me say this. I'm not saying that everybody's going to get cured from blood transfusions. That's not the point. The point is, why would they pursue a policy that A, they didn't know if it was effective, and B, that they're trashing as a black market? Here in America, we transfer semen for artificial insemination between people privately, and we allow breast milk to be transferred in many cases. And I believe that that should be allowed. Why should the people in Africa not be allowed to have a market in something that would help them? Can't we assist that along? Wouldn't that be an effective thing to try? We're kind of desperate at this point, looking for solutions. Why would they not allow that? Well, of course, it's the money. And we've seen this again and over again with medical marijuana. And there's an interesting story coming out of Italy. And they're talking about how they just made medical marijuana legal. They realized that it was very expensive for people. They were paying about 10 times the street price at the pharmacies. So what they're going to do is use the Italian army to grow medical marijuana. That's the kind of compassionate use we should see. And let me point out that one of the key things in recovering is not necessarily going to be your blood transfusion, but having the right kind of palliative care, making sure you're in good condition, especially your immune system. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We've got it.
Waging war on corruption.
All right, you are go.
It's Alex Jones, coming to you live from the front lines of the info war.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're going to go back to your calls in just a few minutes, but I haven't done a plug for the whole show. Let me tell you about Survival Shield X2. With everything that's going on in the world, especially with what we're seeing with Ebola, it says make sure you have your supply of ultra strength Survival Shield X2. A few drops and you receive a powerful dose of key nascent iodine, and instead of drinking excessive amounts of bad tasting iodine, it's time to get prepared with Survival Shield X2 from InfoWars Life. Secure yours at InfoWarsLife.com and store it in your preparedness pack or your home cabinet. You know, the key thing with these viruses is really your physical condition and, of course, the condition of your immune system. It's very important to have good palliative care to make sure that you stay hydrated, to make sure that your electrolytes are in balance. That's one of the key things that people get at the hospitals. But really, the indicators as to whether or not people are going to survive or not is highly dependent on their age, on their health care, on their health condition. It's something that you need to take a look at. As we were just talking about, they're trying to offer miracle cures to people. And of course, my concern about miracle cures is whether or not they're going to require it. Are you going to be required to get the vaccine that DARPA and Monsanto and Bill Gates have been working on? Are they going to quarantine you into a FEMA camp if you don't take that? That's my concern about it, is that they're going to let this thing get out of hand. They say they want to mass produce these artificial genetically modified plant bodies. And yet, if that strategy is one that's going to work, we already have that strategy there. Instead, what we see is the World Health Organization saying, well, this is a black market. We need to work with governments to shut it down, or we really don't know about it yet. Yeah, they do. Actually, they've had cases going back to the SARS epidemic, as well as many others, where they have found that antibodies have been very helpful in terms of treating people, but they won't do the simple thing, like even set up a blood donor registry and test for the purity of the blood. That's what we can't get them to do. So that raises real questions as to whether or not they want this to get out of control. We've seen this in the way that government officials are acting here. So that's the question I have. Now, as this broke out, Alex Jones filed a report. It's up on Infowars.com. Ebola outbreak is confirmed in the U.S. Why are they bringing Ebola patients into Western countries? And now we see that this is spread now in the United States to a second person. First time that's happened in the United States. Let's go to your calls right now. Tim in Virginia has been holding for a while. Tim, go ahead.
Hey, David. Pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you for calling. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
I was thinking a couple years ago you all did reports on chemtrails and flu vaccinations. I'm wondering if you think that people that are getting vaccinations, primarily healthcare workers, going to get vaccinations like flu vaccine, that there's a correlation between that and some sort of aerosol.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, there's clearly people can see that there are precipitants out of these chemtrails. We've had people who worked with the military in terms of doing this as whistleblowers telling us that they're spraying for chemtrails. We can see the effect on the ground. We can see the effect on the temperature. We can see hot spots as people have sprayed the chemtrails. There's an app that tracks that. They also did a documentary in the Paul Revere contest, Look Up. And you can see as kind of a crowdsourcing research. So you can see with that app, as people call in and say that there's a lot of kind of a grid being sprayed of persistent contrails, let's put it that way, in the sky, as chemtrails, as they see chemtrails, they can also correlate that to increases in temperature. So we know that at the, depending on what level they put that into the atmosphere, that can raise the temperature. There's questions as to whether or not geoengineers are trying to put that up there to stop, as they believe, global warming, man-made global warming, but it can raise the temperature. So there's a lot of questions about the geoengineering as to whether or not that's something that is working in conjunction with vaccines. I'll tell you that, you know, one of the things that that they have there is aluminum that they see precipitating out, but clearly it should raise everybody's concern that we see so much being done to sell vaccines everywhere. I mean, you can almost get a flu vaccine at a filling station. You know, when you fill up with gas, you can get a shot in the arm. It's gotten practically that ridiculous. We see it being offered everywhere. And I would have, if I wanted to get something like that, if I really believed that it was effective, I think I would want to get it in an environment where I felt it was one where they were taking care, not just kind of a casual retail outlet. But there's a huge profit motive behind all of this. And that's what I was trying to point out with this ZMapp. It's very curious, the timing that they're doing with all these miracle drugs that they're offering us now for Ebola and telling us that it's not quite there yet. It's going to have to run its course for a while before they can offer those to us. I'm very concerned about that. I'm very concerned about the hypocrisy that they would go out and offer this drug that essentially operates the same way that a real human blood antibodies would work. Why are we seeing that? I mean, I find that to be extremely strange that they would completely ignore that and just say, yeah, we'll have to look at that someday. Meanwhile, they're rushing to fund with hundreds of millions of dollars the mass production of this genetically modified vaccine that's supposed to create plantibodies. I'm really concerned about that. Let's go to the next call. Activist G in Florida. Go ahead.
Hi, David. How are you?
Doing fine. What do you want to talk about?
Good. One of the questions I wanted to ask was the suit that the nurse was wearing when she contracted the Ebola virus.
Mm-hmm.
What level hazmat suit was that? For people that actually, like, I've already purchased suits, which suits, you know, are sufficient enough?
I don't have that specificity of information. I know that, and I don't have the article in front of me. I know that the guys who cleaned up the apartment, the hazmat team that cleaned it up, said that they went to the level above the suits that were recommended by the CDC, and they mentioned that it had a respirator. I think what they're telling people is that you don't need a respirator. I think they went to a full coverage hazmat suit, but I can't give you the level of detail. If you Google it, you'll be able to find it. Take a look at the hazmat crew that cleaned up the apartment, and you'll probably get an idea of what level of hazmat suit that they were looking for.
And the other thing is my husband's an emergency room physician, and I asked him about the standard protocol that he's being told to take regarding the Ebola virus. And
you're breaking up a little bit. Are you still there? Ah, we lost her. I would like to know what they're telling her about that. But let's go to Habu in Wisconsin. Habu.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the courtesy. Just a couple of quick points. You know, I always shake my head when the United States' almost reflexive reaction to something like this is send in the army.
Yes.
As it's been doing all over the world.
Yes.
And your point is spot on about this whole thing about this extended, trials with this particular drug, and we don't know where that's going.
Mm-hmm.
But you are as well read as you are and informed. I see that Nigeria has done quite a job with its limited resources, although it's a rich country, relatively speaking. It's been able to contain this, if we can, believe the veracity of the accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Therein, I think, lies the problem, meaning if the Western countries, and this, listen, let me just be very clear, this is not a Western country's responsibility. China is doing well, India is doing well, Russia is doing well. We can draw upon all these nations to send in people and kind of arrest the epidemic right there at ground zero, you know.
Yes.
And Cuba, you know, I know it's not a favorite topic with you guys, and I'm not an apologist for Cuba, but it has sent the most doctors of any nation, and they are sending doctors to the world.
Yes, so, they tried to send doctors to Katrina, I believe, and of course their help was refused.
Right.
Yes.
And I believe I expect them to come up with a vaccine, or India, before the U.S. and all its expensive stuff. But anyway, listen, thank you. And, you know, kudos to Alex Jones. He was the first person to talk about it being aerosolized. And yes. Now that is being talked about, too.
Yes, yes. Thank you for calling. We're going to be right back with more of your calls. Stay with us. We've got one more segment.
Hello, this is Hank Hill, and I'm telling you what, you need to listen to Alex Jones.
Yeah, yeah. Infowars.com, yeah.
Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're taking your calls on the Ebola outbreaks. Taking another step today, we've had the first person in the United States to contract it within the United States. It is out of control, and as I mentioned earlier, very concerned as to what direction this government is going to take. They say protocols were not followed, yet we know that the long-standing protocols about containing and controlling and isolating have been violated over and over again by our government. We've been told by Obama, as well as by the Texas state official, as well as by the county official that was at that level. So the federal, the state, the county level, they're all telling us zero risk. No chance it's going to come to America. No chance it's going to move beyond this patient. And yet it continues to do so. They're saying that they don't believe that the protocols were followed by the nurse, by the medical staff, yet they insist that they did. We have seen how easy it is to transfer. We read the account from Nancy Reitball, one of the first two people brought back in the United States for treatment at Emory University, saying she had no idea how she got it. She said, perhaps I touched something that a coworker who that she later found out also had Ebola had touched. It's that easily spread. And yet we see the county director of emergency services for Homeland Security, Judge Jenkins, recklessly walking around in the apartment saying that there's zero chance that he can get it, saying that he drove the family 45 minutes to their new home, saying that he's at a press conference wearing the same shirt in which he went into the apartment, hung out with them, drove them around, modeling the kind of behavior that will get people killed. I can't put a finer point on it than that. The bottom line is that by the time he got there, their response was so late. It had been several days. And so if he doesn't come down with it, that's the reason. It's not that it's safe to walk around in an apartment where somebody has been sick with Ebola. There's fluids all over the place when someone is sick with Ebola. It's not safe to go in there for hours or for days. But in this case, they were so late, so tardy in doing it, that it possibly wasn't a risk to him. But we have to question whether or not these health officials, whether or not the CDC is telling us the truth, not only about that, but about these other protocols. Do they even understand the risks themselves? That's the question. But of course, we've been told, and this was an article that came out in Stars and Stripes. It was someone who works for the Council on Foreign Relations. And we were told that Obamacare was really going to be the solution to Ebola. That's right. When they send thousands of soldiers into the hot zone of Ebola, Obamacare has got their back, just like the VA. And yet we had this article that came out yesterday on InfoWars, 28,476 pages relating to Obamacare in the Federal Register so far. And of course, there's going to be still more to come. I remember 5 years ago at a political rally that I filmed, they were going to shred the income tax code. Now, nobody at the income tax, the IRS could tell them exactly how many pages that they would have to shred. They couldn't buy the code. It was going to be thousands of dollars. The best they could get was that it was somewhere between 60 and 65,000 pages. So they got the equivalent number of pages in a phone book and ran them through a shredder. We're already halfway there. Already halfway there with Obamacare. And it hasn't even really kicked in. Is it possible for bureaucracy to solve a pandemic, or is that the disease? And of course, we have the contest that is on InfoWars.com right now, a $7,500 contest, the Ebola contest, where tyranny is the disease. Go to our website and check that out. It gets the message. It's not going to be solved by tyranny, by bureaucracy. That is one of the major problems that we have to overcome to get that under control, to get our lives under control. Let's go to some of our callers right now. We've got Carrie in Pennsylvania holding. Carrie.
Hello, David.
Hey, how you doing? What's on your mind?
Yeah, just an observation from FEMA Region 3, small town. My wife and I were at Goodwill trying to buy some, you know, flannel shirts for winter. And, you know, there was just three or four Mexican guys in there, and they were doing the same thing, looking through all the clothes, coughing and sneezing, and, you know, it was just an observation. It was out of the ordinary.
Well, of course, we can't screen anybody for not only disease coming into this country, we can't screen them for a criminal record because we have no control over our borders. And really, this pandemic, I think, is open borders 2.0. I think that's part of what's behind, a large part of what's behind the reckless behavior of Judge Jenkins in Dallas. He's been promoting open borders, undocumented citizens, as I like to call them. I guess we could call Ebola the undocumented virus because we can't track it and we're not allowed to keep track of the people who are flying on airplanes. We can't quarantine those particular countries. So I guess you could just call that the undocumented pandemic, right?
Right. It's not that I'm paranoid. I'm just wondering, you know, I'm looking and seeing, and we love the show.
Well, thank you for calling. Let's go to Jordan in Virginia. Jordan, it says you're a paramedic.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Doing good.
I just wanted to bring up the fact that the Tecmira vaccination, as well as the NewLink Genetics vaccination, are not typical vaccinations. They actually say that they can remove a section of your DNA. I think the Tecmira site specifically says they can, with a high specificity, remove up to as little as 25 alleles of your genes.
Wow.
And then go in, basically pluck them out and replace them with something else. So I just want to point out that they aren't typical vaccinations and that people should really consider
the implications. Yes, that's what concerns me so much about this. As I pointed out, if they want to use the antibody strategy, they have thousands of possible donors out there of real human antibodies that they could use. But instead, they're going through this genetically modified route, which, of course, they can patent with ZMapp. And as you pointed out with Tecmira, I was not aware of that. I know that Brincidofovir is made by a company called Chimerix. That tells you that they're working on the genetic aspect of it, and it's a broad-spectrum antiviral drug. It works against a lot of different viruses, but it is, just like these other two, it is based on genetic modification, and that's what we're seeing about this. So it raises a lot of concerns with me as to what they can do to and what side effects we might possibly have from that. When we were looking at the as I mentioned earlier, the case back in 2003 from the doctor who was treating people with SARS in China, he pointed out at the time that there was a cocktail called ribavirin, I think is the way to pronounce that. It said it repressed viruses and it had potential side effects that included damage to the heart, liver, and blood, also deformities and unborn children. These pharmaceutical drugs don't come without massive side effects. And so when we look at these miracle drugs, supposedly, that are being offered to us, they're being offered in injectable form. They're being offered as they're all, as far as I'm aware of, working on genetic modification. They have some kind of they're either created genetically as some kind of a genetically modified organism, a transgenic genetically modified organism, or, as you pointed out, they're messing with our DNA itself. And so that's something that is very much to be concerned about. Thank you for pointing that out. Let's go to Don in Houston. Go ahead, Don.
David, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We have a problem. I am not going to take this vaccination, this so-called miracle vaccination that they're going to come up with. I can't help but remember Melissa Melton doing the Infowars.com website, and she went to a Bill Gates speech, and Bill Gates stupidly opened it up for questions because she asked a couple real ones, and it was on TV, man. She locked him up, man, turned him into a pretzel, and poetry in motion to watch her.
He has been all about vaccinations from the get-go, even going to a TED Talk, I believe, is where he released the mosquitoes and talked about how they were going to vaccinate people with mosquitoes. And Liam McAdoo had a very good report about the history of dengue fever and these particular mosquitoes that the Army has used to test people. You know, I think when we look at these troops being put into the hot zone in Liberia, I think we really need to focus on how I believe they're being used as guinea pigs. And beyond that, as one of the callers mentioned, why is it that we're using the military there? Remember, back at Bilderberg 2013, it wasn't just big data, but it was also Africa on the agenda. They've been looking to get into the resources of Africa, find an excuse to get in there, a way to take control. Perhaps they can do it under a humanitarian mask. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 Central. Join us. Alex Jones will be here.